Welcome to the Ferris Love Podcast. Here we explore spiritual insights and practical strategies to help you cultivate a family life rooted in beautiful, self-giving love. Join us as we invite experts to share uplifting perspectives and actionable advice for navigating the joys and challenges of modern family dynamics. Welcome back to the Ferris Love Podcast. Today we are joined by a very special guest, Sister Carolyn, the Vocations Director of the Sisters of St. Francis of the Martyr St. George. Sister Carolyn will be speaking to us about community, growing in relationship with those serving the church, and how families can support those religious living in their own communities. Sister, thank you so much for being on our show.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation. Glad to be here.
So we'd love to just kind of start and hear about your own vocation story and what led you to the Sisters of St. Francis of the Martyr St. George.
Yeah, so I think just the theme of relationship is an important theme for my entire life. And even just how I met the sisters, I am from Rhode Island originally. I'm the oldest of three kids. And we were a Sunday Mass Catholic family. We went to Mass every Sunday. That was non-negotiable, but we went to public school. We didn't pray a family rosary. We didn't pray before meals unless it was a special occasion. And so really just kind of living the 90s Catholic being at Mass every Sunday life, which, you know, there's something to be said for just the grace building on nature and a lot of just the natural virtue that my parents instilled in us and that they lived themselves. They're both just really generous people and have a way of just giving of themselves to the people around them and community involvement and things like that. So I think just that was always a part of our lives. The only sisters that I knew growing up, though, were old and angry. And so there was nothing about religious life that seemed super attractive. But I did have a great love for Jesus and I wanted to live for him. So the bargain that I made when I was in high school was like, all right, I'll work for you. So I'll go to college and I'll study theology and then I'll work for you. And it wasn't until I got to Franciscan University that I met sisters that weren't old and angry and that I actually would look around and say, that could maybe be a thing, but also cute Catholic boys. I would rather marry one of them. We can have 12 kids. They can all be priests and sisters and this idea will go away. So I spent most of my time pursuing that avenue, but the sisters would always ask me to play the guitar for the discernment holy hour. And they said, you know, could you, you know, do this thing? And I was like very clear with them. Like, I'll play the guitar, but I'm not discerning. And even my senior year, I was coming to St. Louis for spring break with a friend of mine who lives from St. Louis. And she said, one of the sisters found out and she said, well, you could come visit our convent. It's not too far from St. Louis. I said, why would I do that? She said, well, we have an adoration chapel. I said, go into the Rome of the West. I'm pretty sure I can find an adoration chapel. I don't need to visit yours. Thank you very much. I'm good, you know? So it wasn't until after I graduated and was dating one of those cute Catholic boys. And then that relationship didn't go the way that either of us expected, frankly. And I found myself in this place of, Lord, I will go wherever you want me to go and do whatever you want me to do. And I started to recognize that my heart was shaped differently than a lot of my peers. And that as much as I loved the idea of marriage and family life, as much as I found that attractive, as much as I saw the beauty of it, it didn't quite seem to fit. And it was almost like, you know, a lot of women, when they think about religious life, they feel very stifled. And for me, it was like I started to think about marriage and I felt really stifled. I felt like the amount of love that the Lord had given me would have been, yeah, just kind of shoved in a box in some sense, and that there was this capacity for spiritual motherhood and the ability to love a lot of people with the heart of Christ that was a part of the way that I was made. And so I reached out to our sisters kind of with my tail between my legs and can I come visit? And it was on that visit, I walked through the doors and I just felt the sense of home. And it was very similar to the sense that I had when I visited Franciscan and knew that I was supposed to go to school there, and very similar to when I interviewed for the job that I took after graduation. I knew I was supposed to take it. I thought, okay, well, if that was a way that the Holy Spirit moved me at point A and point B, then that's probably him here as well. And I remember the day that I entered, driving across the bridge from Missouri into Illinois and just praying like, Lord, I'm 96.3% sure this is what you want. And if it's not, I give you permission to shut the door. And this is my 20th year in the community. So he did shut the door, but it was behind me.
So beautiful. Wow. Thank you. And that's so incredible. And I love how you talked about, you know, just your heart was shaped differently. It's a very beautiful phrase to say for that. So I love that. Okay. So let's just kind of dive in a little bit deeper for those who may not understand or know about the religious life. What does your community look like? Go for it.
As a sister of St. Francis of the Martyr St. George, we live an active religious life. This is a hot take, but contemplative active actually is not a distinction that the church makes. It's a distinction that a lot of communities will use. we're an active community that has a lot of prayer. And, you know, so there's contemplative religious life and there's active religious life. And if you consider yourself to be contemplative active, it just means you're a normal active religious community because you have an active apostolate, but also the same rich prayer life that is necessary for living a consecrated life. So we pray liturgy of the hours together in community, morning prayer, midday, evening and night prayer. We gather together for mass every day, obviously the source and summit, and like really the center of our communal life as well. And then also have additionally a 30-minute time of personal meditation, as well as praying the rosary and the stations as part of our personal prayer and devotion every day. So it's a rich, rich prayer life lived in community with an active apostolate. And what's interesting for our community in particular is that our charism is not synonymous with our apostolate. Like some people, it's like, what's your charism? And what they're asking is, what do you do? So
yeah,
some communities that is synonymous, like, what's your charism, Dominicans? Oh, it's preaching and teaching. So what do you do? Oh, we preach and teach. The charism of our community is bringing Christ's merciful love to the world, making Christ's merciful love visible. So kind of incarnating mercy. And so we do that in a variety of ways because mercy needs to be incarnated in a variety of different ways. And we have sisters who are involved in education from every level, from we have a daycare center. And so starting at 6 weeks old and then all the way up to the college and university level. And then we also have sisters involved in healthcare on every level, from healthcare administration to pastoral care. We've got a biomedical engineer. We've got a pharmacist. We have sisters involved in direct nursing care. We have a nursing home for in North County, St. Louis, and we care for retired priests in the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska. So a little bit of everything, bringing mercy to the world. I say about 40% of our sisters are in some kind of education, about 40% are in some kind of healthcare. And then 20% of us are the jacks of all trades, master of none, and we do whatever else needs to be done. So whether that's working for diocesan work, parish work, working for our own community, as I'm doing right now in my apostolate as vocation director. I spent 7 years teaching high school before this, but I really enjoy this opportunity to accompany women in their discernment, really just to accompany young people in discernment. I do a lot of work with young people in different discernment groups and visiting schools and colleges and universities and giving talks and things like that. So,
yeah, that's incredible. And so good for, you know, you to bring that to the world, really. Like you're bringing it to everyone. You're not just, focused on one central area. I love that. Mm-hmm. So how does your daily life in your community with your sisters foster like a deeper friendship? Like how do you go about fostering that? Because I think people have this image of, you know, you guys are doing your prayer and then you go out and do your thing and then that's it. It's like, how do you incorporate that relationships amongst each other within the community?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's something we're continuing to grow in. And I just think religious in general are starting to continue to grow in. Mother Mary Frances, who's a now deceased Poor Clare nun from Roswell, New Mexico, has an amazing book called But I Have Called You Friends. And really a lot of what she writes about in that book is what we're trying to incorporate into our daily life. And one of her things is like that really everyone should be your friend. And there are some friends that you share more with and some friends that you share less with, but just having an openness to the gift of friendship and to be able to respect someone to the degree that, oh man, I don't really like anything about you, but I'm going to look again. I'm going to respect. I'm going to look again and look again until I can find at least a kernel in you that is likable and even lovable and start to love that little kernel. And then perhaps we might be able to grow into a deeper relationship. But yeah, prayer, community, and apostolate have to go in that order. And whenever we're putting apostolate first, we're living a disordered religious life. So I think just like learning how to balance that. One of the important things that we do in our community is we have meals together. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner are taken together in common. And we have tables that seat six sisters. And every 2 weeks, we pick numbers and you find out what table you're going to sit at. So it's not like the cool kids table and then the nerd table and then like the goth table. I mean, that's we don't have that in common. But, you know, you don't see those distinctions. You could be sitting at a table with the youngest sister in the community sitting next to the oldest sister in the community. And there's such a rich variety of personalities and backgrounds and even apostolates. So many religious communities will keep silence during their meals. We do have a small time of silence at the beginning of the meal for a table reading. But then most days, unless it's a recollection day, we're talking during lunch and supper. Breakfast, we keep silence, which is great for those of us who don't really wake up until about 9:30 in the morning. So
I was going to say, some people need some coffee before that.
Yeah. It's like just really charitable to keep silence for breakfast. We speak, if it's a feast day or a special day, then we'll talk at breakfast too. But and lunch and supper are great occasions to be able to share, like, oh, what happened in your apostolate today? And to hear the stories about the cute little kid in second grade religion class at St. Mary's School, or to hear about the patient that was encountered and the patient who came back to the church after many years and asked for the sacraments, or just really inspiring to hear the way that mercy is making its way into the apostolate through each of our sisters, and the way that each of us particularly incarnate merciful love in our interactions.
Wow. I love that. And you had mentioned earlier about kind of your specific charism was different from, like you said, that there was a differentiation between the charism and the
apostolate.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So the charism, my understanding is the Franciscan charism. Is that correct?
Actually, spirituality. So it's kind of like this, like spirituality is the bigger umbrella, and then charism is the smaller umbrella, and then apostolate is the particular work. So you're going to find religious communities that are teachers or that do healthcare that are kind of like a dime a dozen. Mm-hmm. The question isn't like, what do you do? The question is, what's the spirit with which it's done, right? So even our sisters collaborate very much with the OSF sisters in Peoria, and their charism is to serve with the greatest care and love. That's the, like, their apostolate is healthcare, and then the flavor with which it's done is to serve with the greatest care and love.
Okay.
We do have sisters who have a healthcare apostolate, but the charism is making Christ merciful and visible. And then the spirituality, the umbrella for us would be the same, following in the footsteps of St. Francis. And I think that actually Franciscan spirituality has a particular flavor even of how friendships are undertaken, because St. Francis is kind of like a friend to all. You know, think about his will. He was like a man for others in the way that he lived his life in Assisi and associated with the poor and the lowly, and wasn't afraid of friendship with maybe people that he, quote, shouldn't have been friends with, even the animals, like, right. Like, that's the beauty. And why, like, what was that? Like, he recognized the common fatherhood of God. So the basis of his friendship or his relationship with people around him, or even with creation around him, was just this recognition of, like, the common fatherhood of God. And so I think for us in religious life, it's to remember that, like, we have a common fatherhood, and Jesus is our brother, and we're all brothers and sisters. And in our case, we're all sisters here. And God called us, like, what we have in common is that each of us has been called to make Christ merciful love visible. Each of us has been given this charism. So there's a supernatural glue that brings us together in relationship, even though on a natural level, I look around and I'm like, wow, here comes everybody. Yeah. I remember I was getting ready for final vows, and kind of just this reality of, like, final vows, yes, you're saying yes to the Lord forever, but you're also saying yes to the community forever, and the community is saying yes to you forever. And walking into the refectory where we take our meals, and we keep silence before the meal, and we kind of stand behind our chairs and then pray, and then are seated together for the silent table reading. And as I just kind of looked around at all the sisters, I thought, you are my sister, and you are my sister, and gosh, you really drive me nuts, but you are also my sister, and we're about to do this forever, you know?
Yeah. That's powerful. And that's just like, I mean, that's like families too. You know, you marry someone, you marry them forever.
Yeah.
I'm sure you have a lot of, in the midst of your apostolates, you have a lot of interactions with different family members or families of different types. And, you know, I'm just curious how can families support, you know, you guys in your apostolate, as well as embracing that relationship with you in the midst of the daily interactions, excuse me.
Actually, one of my favorite things is just the complementarity of vocations. In fact, tonight I'm leading a women's discernment group, and I have a married mom, a wife and mom, coming to speak about her experience of what it means to live as bride and mother. And then I'm going to speak about what it means for me to live as bride and mother. And what I want the women to walk away with is the reality that living as bride and mother in this particular vocation, and then the vocation of marriage and family life, is actually more alike than it is different if it's lived properly. Because really what it is like, it's about having a heart that's open to receive the gift of the other, and a heart that's open to love the other into the security of being a son or daughter. Like, being a bride is that mutual gift of self, right? Like, receiving the gift and giving the gift totally and freely. But then to be a mother is, I love another into their security of being sons and daughters without worrying about what it means for me in return. Yeah. And I just love that that reality. And I think, yeah, when religious life is lived well and family life is lived well, we can help each other so much. Just 2 weeks ago, I was on a retreat with like 200 women from the St. Louis area and all different states in life, all different ages, and really beautiful just to kind of live in that space. And in fact, two of the women that were on the retreat were college classmates of mine. And I'll just say that when we were in college together, we did not run in the same circles at all. Yeah. And to imagine that either of them would be homeschooling moms on a women's retreat 20 years later was like, wow, here we all are. And we are so much more alike than we are different. And I think that's part of it too, is like for us to live our life well is also to inspire the families around us to live their family life well. And then when we get to witness families living their family life so well, it's an inspiration for us to dive in more deeply to our lives. And it is, you know, we, in the same way that families have their structure, and even when outsiders are part of it, it's just different. Like it's the same thing for us too. Like we do have somewhat, it's not a monastic life, but it is somewhat of like a, this is our life. And there's not really a whole lot of opportunities for people to enter into it, except for when we have open houses or our feast day, when we celebrate vows and things like that. Or last year we celebrated the 100th anniversary of our sisters coming to the US. So we had this massive family picnic that anyone was invited to come to. And so there's opportunities like that. But I think praying for us is huge. We pray for priests a lot. And I think sometimes religious get forgotten, especially if you don't have religious in your area. So please pray for religious communities to be, to live families and to be, as the documents call us, experts in communion, right? Like, I think that's something that we do have to offer to the world, but we need prayers to be able to do it. Something that we have an adoration chapel at our convent. And so it's always a joy to walk in there and seeing families making visits. And so if there are opportunities to pray in a chapel that is part of a religious community or a convent or a monastery, I think that's a great opportunity. It's, I don't know, I always love seeing little kids and babies. It just makes me smile. So being able to even hearing the coos in the back of a silent, usually silent 6 a.m. mass sometimes is just really life-giving as well.
Yeah. And you had mentioned earlier with your story, your vocation story, about how you were just, you went to Sunday mass and that was pretty much it for the most part growing up. How, I mean, and your vocation, even from those graces, going to mass every Sunday and just laying that foundation, you were able to discern, okay, this is what God is calling me to be. How would you encourage parents to help their children, you know, aside from mass, Sunday mass, but like in, develop that fertile soil to be able to discern whether or not that's their vocation?
Yeah, I think two things come to mind right now is that I just want to encourage parents to have open hands with their children. Mm. Any sense of expectation or like this is what you have to do is in any direction, right? Like the parent who is like so like freaked out that their child might be called to priesthood or consecrated life and is so like, I need grandchildren. Like that's not having an open hand mentality. Or the family is like, I want at least one of my 12 kids to be a priest or religious. You know, that's not a healthy mentality either. So to really just develop a sense of open hands and a givenness of like, this child has been given to me by the Lord and I desire that he or she might glorify him in whatever state in life they're called to. I think that's step number one. And then step number two is cultivating a space for listening, both in relationship within family, but I think a space of listening, like how do you teach your kids how to listen to the voice of God? Like, do your kids know what the voice of God sounds like? And even if it's that, hey, we read the Sunday gospel together and we practice paying attention to the one word or phrase that might have our attention, or we do a family examine at the end of the night. I know a family that does that with little kids, like a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, and a 7-year-old. They're sitting around and they ask for the Holy Spirit to come and be with them. And then they ask the question of like, where do we see Jesus's love in our hearts today and in our lives today? And sometimes it's just letting them think about it. And sometimes they share about it. And then it's like, where did we not respond to Jesus's love? Where do we respond well? And just like doing an examine, but like with little kids, to just get in that practice of recognizing the movements of God, even from a young age. Because the more we start to recognize the movements of God, the more free our hearts become to be able to respond to his call, whatever it is and whenever it comes.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Yeah. I love that. You had mentioned a couple things already just about, you know, the examine. Are there any other suggestions that you would have for families that, you know, they could incorporate maybe little things into their day-to-day that would just help with, additionally helping with that listening to God, but then also just growing in their faith in general, like their children, helping their children grow in their faith, whether that means that they're called to the religious life, the single life, or, you know, the married life, whatever they're called to, that they have those practices in place, you know, because I think some people can get caught up in the idea that, well, that's for the religious sisters over there versus I'm this and I don't need to do that. You know, it's like, but we all called to that relationship that you were mentioned, that being sons and daughters of God. So how could you help parents and teach their children those kinds of things?
Yeah, I think very simply, like one of the things that gives the day that we live structure and even that it gives the year structure is the liturgical year, right? So living the liturgical year well within the home and celebrating what needs to be celebrated and incorporating sacrifice where that's invited as well, you know? Yeah. So the Lenten season is going to be coming up pretty soon here and just giving people space to really live Lent together as a family and to practice not just like what are we going to give up, but the prayer and the almsgiving as well. Like, what are we going to give during Lent? What are we going to give to the Lord? What are we going to give to our neighbors? I like to, sometimes for Lent, I like to do something for body, mind, and soul and have a practice that lines up with prayer, fasting, and almsgiving that goes along with those. And I think that's a good thing too, because it helps to incarnate. Like, there's my Franciscan spirituality coming out. It's like, it just becomes more tangible and it helps to incarnate the spiritual life. So whatever you can do to incarnate the presence of God in your house, I think is huge. Like whether it's having a prayer table and everyone knows where the rosaries are kept. And, you know, maybe you put up a sacred image of the saints that's going to be celebrated that week or that month. And if you have older kids, even giving them a little bit of some liberty to be the ones who set up the table and decide like what's going to be on it for the month and what the colors. I really have a great appreciation for Catechesis of the Good Shepherd and the beauty of the tangible learning that takes place for children to really experience the presence of the Good Shepherd in their own lives and to know his voice. And so anything that's tangible, especially for the littles, I think is huge. But conversation also is huge. Just like really developing humanity, because grace builds on nature. And so as we develop our humanity, like in order to be a religious woman, you can't just like grow up as a religious. You have to first be human and you have to know what it means to be a woman in order to know what it means to be a woman religious. Like for someone, a man who's called to religious life or for a priest, like you have to be human. You have to be a man before you can really live those particular vocations. And I would say even for marriage, like the more human we are and the more man and woman we are respectively, the more healthy a marriage is going to be and the more ready someone's going to be to enter into marriage. Right? The Catechism paragraph, I think it's 357, says that the human person is the only creature created by God that's capable of self-knowledge, self-possession, and self-gift in that order. And so anything that moms and dads can do in the family to develop self-knowledge and self-possession will by nature be getting them ready to make a self-gift, whatever it is and whenever it comes.
Wow. Excellent. Amazing. What is something from your personally, from your own religious community and from your own life, your day-to-day, that you would say, hey, parents and families could incorporate this into their home or take this from, you know, what you do and try to incorporate it into your own life? I mean, you've mentioned a lot of things, but I'm curious specifically with either, you know, your spirit, with your, you know, charism, anything like that.
I think with the charism and merciful love, so much of that flows from our devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. And I think devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, enthronement of the Sacred Heart of Jesus, and the Heart of Jesus is the source of mercy. The Heart of Jesus is the source of forgiveness. It's the Heart of Jesus that teaches us how to love. He loved us with a human heart, the Catechism tells us. If you haven't read the Holy Father's new encyclical on the human and divine love of Jesus, I mean, it is exquisite. And it's really just moved me deeply in my own prayer to go deeper in my devotion to the Sacred Heart, my love for the Sacred Heart. And I think even in there's some really practical ways to just form our understanding of devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. It's a very human devotion that takes us into the divinity that we're made for and that we're called to. So, I think devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus and devotion to the Blessed Mother, whether it's a family rosary, but even just going deeper into the mysteries, that's another little thing for the prayer corner, right? Like, could you put up some pictures of the mysteries for the kids to meditate on as you're going into, inviting Mary into the home in the same way that the angel said to Joseph, do not be afraid to take Mary into your home. Like, do not be afraid to take Mary into your home, Mary who is a mother, Mary who has the capacity to mother, even in the space of the human failures of motherhood and fatherhood that are just going to be present because moms and dads are human. And the beauty of having a home that is where Mary is present, I think is huge.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show. I'd love to hear if anyone was interested as they listen to this podcast in the Sisters of St. Francis of the Martyr, St. George, excuse me. Can you tell us a little bit about how they can find more information out if they have a contact or anything like that?
Sure, absolutely. We're found on the internet. You can find us on our webpage, www.altonfranciscans. That's A-L-T-O-N. It's the name of the town we live in. altonfranciscans.org, as you might imagine. Sisters of St. Francis of the Martyr, stgeorge.org might have been long. So we went with Alton Franciscans. And just a note on that, people are like, why can't you pick one saint? The bottom line is we were founded at the Church of St. George in Tuna, Germany. And so we're Franciscan. So that's how George became part of our name. But I would say we have a little bit of a warrior spirit about us as well.
Yeah, that's that martyr spirit.
yeah. So we're located in Alton, Illinois, just over the river from St. Louis. We have an adoration chapel that's open daily from 6:30 a.m. until 8 p.m. So people are always welcome to come and visit the Lord there and make a visit and pray. And feel free to reach out via our website as well. I'm happy to answer questions or to entertain anything else.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for being on our show and sharing all these beautiful words that you had today. I'm so grateful for you.
Thanks so much. It was great to be with you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Ferris Love Podcast. In 2025, we are continuing to share the beautiful devotion to Mary, Mother of Ferris Love, while providing practical tools and advice for parents, couples, and families. You can help us with this mission by sharing this episode with a friend, subscribing to the podcast, or leaving a review. To learn more, visit us at ferrislovefamilyproject.org.